All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, good evening. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We're on episode 20. That's our day two of talking about electromagnetic pulse and the repercussions of it. Yesterday we covered very much in detail what a SCADA system and what the Commission for EMPs were talking about. And I hope I didn't bore you to death on it, but please go to empcommission.org. Do this research yourself. Read through it. Ask if your faithful politicians and people who uphold the safety and security of your well-being in city, town, or county, make sure they have this information. And not only that, challenge them. Challenge them, if you have to, openly, to see that these people care about their community more than about being reelected. Here's my problem with politicians, and the reason why I would probably never be one, or could be one. For one thing, I have a backbone, so there's problem number one. Problem number two is I would probably immediately be escorted out of Capitol Hill after beating the crap out of four or five of them the first day. And I say that simply because we cannot, at this point in time in our country, when we're facing an economic collapse, a potential civil war, a potential world war with Russia and China and, you know, whoever else, and various different types of terroristic threats, not to mention arguably the biggest terroristic threat coming from the current United States government, who thinks its citizens are the terrorists. I couldn't stand for that. I couldn't be around these people. You're going to sit there and tell me that we need to argue more about the Boys and Girls Club restroom and who gets to go in it than security for the country or the well-being of the nation or the preparatory systems that are not really in place anymore for America if there is a gigantic grid down or a meteor impact or some sort of a Currington event. That happens, we're not prepared for it. But instead, we love to argue about social economic issues. We love to argue about social justice and racial injustice. But instead, we don't fight the bigger picture here. We don't go after the real monsters at bay that are waiting to completely destroy everything in this country and your way of life. We overlook that. For people's feelings. Maybe because of my military background, maybe because of 10 years in law enforcement, I don't care about your feelings. I really don't. Your feelings are not what's going to help me survive. I don't care if I offend you. I don't care if you run home and go to your closet and cry because, you know, Doug said a mean thing to me on the radio. Truth hurts, and the truth hurt well a lot more when we don't have the ability to feed people in this country properly or take care of them properly, when we don't have the ability to have life-sustaining machinery still operating for people that are in the hospitals and nursing homes, because we have a government and states who choose not to prepare to provide the emergency services and power for these places. And it's not like it's a new subject. It's not like it hasn't been brought up. Once again, I have so many different things I could sit here and bitch about, you know, this problem or that problem. Right now, we're just focusing on EMP. We're just focusing on what happens if we lose power. And this is just one source of a loss of power, which is the EMP. It could come from a solar storm. It could come from poor maintenance of a grid structure. It could come from a natural disaster like the tornadoes that unfortunately just ripped through half the country. My heart and prayers are out to any of the victims of that and the families. we see severe storms like Hurricane Katrina or Big Sandy, severe wildfires, economic terrorism, domestic terrorism, international terrorism, earthquakes, you know, the random tree that falls down and it hits the transformer explodes, causes a wildfire, sets half a city on fire, along with more subordinate energy structures. So these things happen, okay? But one thing that we can at least address that is maybe a superstitious kind of concern, but is one of the biggest concerns to the United States militarily, is the threat of a high-yield, low-altitude electromagnetic pulse that our enemies, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and China, have all said that they would use. The Russians even were touting a new type of submarine that would release a smaller submarine from the mothership that would then go to our west coast, and it would detonate itself, a large, I don't know how many megaton, basically torpedo, that would detonate itself underneath the ocean and causing a gigantic radioactive tsunami to hit the west coast. Those are our enemies. Why is it that we find that the enemies amongst us and around us, our neighbors, are more interesting because they didn't vote the way I did, or because they want to pretend they're a little girl today, or they want to pretend that they're a boy today? I really don't care about your mental issues. What I care about is the structure of America, maintaining society as we know it, because most of you people do not know and have not experienced just how crappy the rest of the world can be without the freedoms of America, without the power that is on constantly, the fresh food, the ability to get good, clean gasoline. I remember in Iraq, kids were running around selling watered-down 2-liter bottles of gasoline to each other. You know, people do what they have to survive, right? We have never felt that in the 20th century. We haven't. You know, not the 21st century. We haven't. We have modern day luxury from the advancements of our society, from all walks of life, all people of all races who have helped to contribute to build this mighty empire that we still call the United States. But it can come tumbling down because we have given so much power and authority over to electronics that it is our Achilles heel. It really is the glass jaw of the U.S. I suffer myself sometimes to think of what I would do if I woke up one morning and there was no longer power. Am I really prepared? And I would say I'm probably more prepared than the average person. But am I really prepared? See, guys like me, I'm always prepared for the gunfight. I'm always prepared for the doomsday army and all that cool stuff a lot of us guys like to use our bravado and talk about. I got my guns and my cool guy gear and I got all my skills. I'm willing to go out and, you know, do some Call of Duty work out in the field. That is not real life. Yeah, that is part of it. That will be part of it when the collapse happens. You will have a necessity for protecting yourself and others with a gun. All of you pacifists out there who think that you don't need a gun, don't come outside. Don't even venture outside. Because the moment you do, people will be looking at you. People are going to be shopping in your suburbs like they're going through a grocery store. And those who have the guns and those of the larger majorities, the larger numbers, they will be successful shoppers. Hope you're ready. Hope you're prepared. That's my good feeling motto of the day. You know, one of these days I'm going to come to you and I'm going to have some really fun, cool, interesting things to say and uplifting, but You know, until America decides to change its attitude, my attitude is going to fit the nation. I've always been this way. I've always been a rather serious guy. I like to cut up and kid around, but at the end of the day, I'm a rather serious guy. And when we talk about preparing the nation, we don't need to come at it lighthearted. We don't need to hold the punches. We don't need to be nice and sweet when we talk about each other, because we're talking about human life. We're talking about children. We're talking about elderly. Every passing person in this country who's, you know, going back and forth, living their lives, are going to be affected by this. How prepared are we to sustain them as a government? If I was still in the government, I wish that I would be able to have transferred into something that was more along the lines of the Preparation for America. I think FEMA does a decent job at it, but I don't think they're that great at it. I think there's a lot of agencies out there that are unknown, that do little things here and there, but we don't have a real agency out there that looks at these type of threats, that the military says this is like number two biggest threats. We don't really have anyone out there who's addressing, okay, how do we get America prepared? What's the best thing to do? Should the government be prepared? Or should the government set up we, the people, to be prepared? The government's very small. Even though the government doesn't think that, the government thinks it's a tyrant. The government is relatively small. Its workforce is relatively small. And we have the ability to send subject matter experts and funding from the federal government to states, to counties, to municipals, to townships, to the small towns, and to teach people to set up a life-saving, life-sustaining, preparatory experiment, I guess you could say, because it's only an experiment that is successful whenever it's working. Right now, you know, it just is what it is. It's really not even there. We're only ready and prepared really at the individual level, not at the county, not at the state, not at the federal. It's too many people. But we could have taught the people how to prepare. We could have said, or we could have sent a generator to every house. We could have, you know, prepared our electric grid and hardened the structures. We could have put more supporting systems within this grid that are of mechanical nature and not just electronic nature. So if the electrical devices go down, at least we have mechanical needs for pumping fresh water out of the aquifers, for you know, moving water through the water treatment plants, for you know, bringing the power back on some way, somehow, because we are so reliant upon electricity. When the electricity stops, life in America stops. And then, after a couple of days of inconvenience, once it turns into a week, and then it turns into 2 weeks, people are going to figure out no one is helping them. Their neighbors are going to try to help each other. Maybe your small cities can try and pull together resources, but then you'll have to travel outside your home to go to that resource. Unless, you know, unless you live in a community where you can throw a baseball and hit, you know, City Hall, you're not going to be so close to all of those necessities, all of the food line, the, you know, the medical places that will probably be ad hoc set up. You're not going to be within walking distance of that, more than likely. So that's either going to bring civilization from out of the counties closer into the towns, or it's going to leave people in place, and those people who are going to be left in place are going to have to learn how to do this on their own. And more or less, these small cities or large cities are going to start to be divided into territories. And very quickly, that's going to become tribal because people are going to go after resources. People are going to want to secure resources. There's always that one guy who thinks he's a warlord or a dictator who says, nope, that's my pond. No one is drinking out of my pond. By God, it's my land, it's my pond, it's my water. Get off of it. When you may have enough to sustain a small community, people will come to take that water. People will kill you over fresh water, and don't think they won't. We're going to go to a break, and after that break, we're going to get back into some of the ramblings of the EMP Commission. I got some other things in here to talk about that are really exciting and motivating and uplifting, so hope you're ready. I'll see you on the other side.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
All right, thank you. Welcome back. So we're going to jump right into this. I got a lot of material to cover and not a very long time. So to provide an insight into the potential impact of these EMP-induced electronic system malfunctions, one can consider the details of historical events. In these cases, similar and arguably less severe system malfunctions have produced consequences and situations that are far too complex to predict beforehand using a model or an analysis system. Another important observation is that these incidents are seldom the result of single factors. Rather, they are a combination of unexpected events that only in hindsight are easily related to the impact. This is not surprising given the complexity of the systems involved. Before considering the historical database, it is important to remember that historical examples, although important for the insight they provide into the dependence of a functioning modern infrastructure on its automated eyes, ears, or remote controllers, do not adequately capture the scale of the expected EMP scenario. In the latter, it is not one or a few SCADA systems that are malfunctioning. The typical historical scenario, but large numbers, hundreds or even thousands of systems, with some fraction of those rendered permanently inoperable until replaced or physically required to be repaired. Significant historical events that provide insight into the potential impact of damage or upset to control systems include Hurricane Katrina, 1996 Western States Blackout, the August 14, 2003 Northeast Blackout, a geomagnetic storm in 1989, in the June 10, 1999 Bellingham Pipeline Incident, the August 19, 2000 Carlsbad Pipeline Incident, the July 24, 1994 Pembroke United Kingdom Refinery Incident, and a Netherlands Electromagnetic Interference Incident. The following other four incidents, Hurricane Katrina, the Western States Blackout, August 14, 2003 Blackout, and the geomagnetic storm of 1989, are still part of the discussions of what EMP effects on the electrical power grid could look like. But we're going to get really defined here with some of these incidents that were recorded. Now, the SCADA system that they're talking about is a robotic system that tells valves and switches to turn on and to turn off, to open and to close. And in the realms of a pipeline or a refinery, a nuclear power plant, hydroelectric generator, all these different types of electrical generating sources require SCADA systems to say, you need to open or you need to close. You need to turn on, you need to turn off. But when that power is disabled, or when that system becomes malfunctioning to where it's no longer adequate, it needs to be repaired or replaced, we start having repercussions down the line of the system. You're going to start having lines that are not bleeding out and they're being overcharged and overpressuring and thus rupturing. A ruptured line could, you know, depending on the city or depending on the impact of the area, could be a severe life-taking type of situation. And we're going to see that here in some of these incidents. All right, Bellingham pipeline incident. On June 10th, 1999, one of the Olympic pipelines transporting gasoline ruptured in Whatcom Falls Park area of Bellingham, Washington. About 250,000 gallons of gasoline from the pipeline entered the Hannah and Whatcom Creeks, where the fuel ignited, resulting in 3 fatalities and 8 injuries. In addition, the banks of the creek were destroyed over a 1.5-mile section, and several buildings adjacent to the creek were severely damaged. Causes included improperly set relief valves, delayed maintenance inspections, and SCADA system discrepancies. The effects of all came together at the same time that changes in the pipeline operations were occurring. Given the wide area of an EMP, it is conceivable that some of the pipelines affected could also suffer from poor maintenance. The electronic disturbances of an EMP event could be expected to precipitate SCADA failures and the ensuing loss of valve controls. Now, pipelines. Let me read something to you real quick. You know, we'll discuss all these pipelines and all these incidents, and then I'm going to get into just how many there are. And it's a little bit of alarming when you start thinking about how many things could be exploding. All right. Carlsbad pipeline incident. On August 19th, 2000, an explosion occurred on one of 3 adjacent large natural gas pipelines near Carlsbad, New Mexico, operated by the El Paso Natural Gas Company. The pipelines supply consumers and electric utilities in Arizona and Southern California. 12 people, including 5 children, died as a result of the explosion. The explosion left an 86-foot-long crater. After the pipeline failure, the Department of Transportation's Office of Pipeline Safety, OPS, ordered the pipeline to be shut down. The explosion happened because of failures in maintenance and loss of situational awareness, conditions that would be replicated by data acquisition disruptions caused by an EMP. Now, the data acquisition stuff all has to do with SCADA. That is information that's being sent through transmission lines from the generating sources of power and then thus from where it's being flowed to, all the different control valves, and that's all being processed by SCADA. The SCADA is telling all these different electrical components what to do, where to send what to turn off, what to open, what to close. Once again, if SCADA completely gets destroyed or is taken offline, very, very bad things start to happen, and immediately start to happen. Pembroke refinery incident. On July 24th, 1994, a severe thunderstorm passed over the Pembroke refinery in the United Kingdom. Lightning strikes resulted in a 0.4-second power loss of subsequent power dips throughout the refinery. Consequently, numerous pumps and overhead fin fan coolers tripped repeatedly, resulting in the main crude column pressures, safety valves, lifting, and major upsets in the process units and other refinery units, including those within the fluid catalytic cracking complex, the FCC. There was an explosion in the catalytic cracking complex, and a number of isolated fires continued to burn at locations within the FCC, butamer, and alkylation units. The explosion was caused by flammable hydrocarbon liquid continuously being pumped into a process vessel that, because of a valve's malfunction, had its outlet closed. The control valve was actually shut when the control system indicated that it was open. The malfunctioning process control did not allow the refinery operators to contain the situation. As a result of this incident, an estimated 10% of the total refinery capacity in the United Kingdom was lost until this complex returned to service. The business loss estimated a $70 million, which reflects 4.5 months of downtime. That means 4.5 months of this complex not running. The disturbances caused by the lightning strikes, power loss, and degradation would also result from an EMP event. 4.5 months. 4.5 months to get this one facility back online. Do you have 4.5 months of power? Do you have 4.5 months of gas and diesel, food and water? I hope you do. Netherlands EMI incident. A mishap occurred at a natural gas pipeline SCADA system located about 1 mile from the port of Den Helder, Netherlands in the late 1980s. A SCADA disturbance caused a catastrophic failure of an approximately 36-inch diameter pipeline, which resulted in a large gas explosion. The failure was caused by EMI traced to a radar coupling into the wires of the SCADA system. Radio frequency energy caused the SCADA system to open and close at the radar scan frequency, a relay that was, in turn, controlling the position of a large gas flow control valve. The resulting changes in valve position created pressure waves that traveled down the pipeline and eventually caused the pipeline to fail. The incident shows the potential damage to pipelines from improper control system operations, and this is another condition that can be replicated by an EMP event. Here is their summary, the EMP Commission's summary for SCADA systems. SCADA systems are vulnerable to EMP insult. The large numbers and widespread reliance on such systems by all of the nation's critical infrastructures represents a systemic threat, to their continued operation following an EMP event. Additionally, the necessity to reboot, repair, or replace large numbers of geographically widely dispersed systems will considerably impede the nation's recovery from such an assault. Now, I want you to consider a few things. We were just discussing pipelines, all right? That's just pipelines. If you visit eai.gov, you'll find all this information I'm about to give you. There are 185 operational pipelines in the U.S. There are 129 operable petroleum refineries in the U.S. As of December 31st, 2020, there were 23,417 electric generators and about 11,070 utility-scale power plants in the United States. There are 55 commercially operated nuclear power plants with 93 nuclear power reactors in 28 different states. Of the currently operating nuclear plants, 32 plants have 2 reactors, and 3 other nuclear plants have 3 reactors. The largest nuclear plant is the Palo Verde plant in Arizona, and it has 3 reactors. There are more than 90,000 dams in the U.S., of which less than 2,300 produce power as of 2020. The other dams are used for recreation or stock farm ponds, flood control, which could be a big thing whenever the flood vents open up and release pressure from the dam. Dams are also used for water supply, like potable water for cities or communities, and also irrigations. On another note, there are 6,090 hospitals in the U.S. and 15,600 nursing homes. In 2019, there were 1.7 million beds and 1.4 million patients in those beds at nursing homes. Now, OSHA requires all hospitals to have emergency backup power. Normally, this means a large diesel generator. I know within the federal government, we had, you know, we were always recommending and making sure that these facilities had on-demand power, uninterrupted power supplies, and multiple different forms of backup battery power supplies. Now, for the federal side, you know, for the lights to stay on, you know, like the emergency power lights, the exit lights and all that, typically that's like a 4-hour battery. For life-sustaining services, so that means the air conditioning unit, the doors that may lock or unlock depending on how the security system is set up, alarms, the computer hardware, the battery backup, the cameras, all these things, these life support sustaining operations, they were only going to last as long as there was diesel or some sort of a fuel source within the generator. Some of the generators also use natural gas piped directly into it, but I found very few of those. Very, very, very few of those. Most of them, someone had to come and put diesel into the generator, which would be a contractor, had to put diesel in the generator, and also had to provide maintenance to said generator every month to ensure that its load capacity could bear the weight of the facility if the power went out. Here's some of the problems, though. OSHA requires all hospitals to have emergency backup power. Normally, this means large diesel generators. Okay, we got that. These generators can only handle the load of critical circuits in hospitals for approximately 96 hours, which is about 4 days. So if you are on a ventilator because of COVID, or if you are in ICU and you're on some sort of a life-supporting device and the power goes out, well, between the power going out and the generators kicking on and hopefully catching all the different circuit breakers that are now thrown off and putting all the life-sustaining places back into full power, you have 4 days. So that means if something bad happens in this country and we lose power, you have 4 days to get your loved one potentially out of the hospital and back home. And that's if you can support whatever their medical need is. That is a very hard discussion to have with some people right now. But that is the reality that we face in a government that refuses to answer a very simple question. Harden the grid. How do we do it? And why is it not done? I don't have the time or the need or the patience for the excuses. I want to see results. It's what I pay for my government, and I expect and I demand results. And so should you. The federal government requires nursing homes to maintain safe ambient temperatures, but does not stipulate how and does not require generators or other alternative energy sources to run heating and air conditioning systems or other life-sustaining systems within nursing homes. States can implement more stringent guidelines, but as to date, Texas still has not. We still haven't. Now, I don't want to say this in such a bad way, but it's going to come out that way. A lot of times it takes really bad things and a lot of people to die for the government to say, oh man, we should have done something different. We should have redirected funds to over here to better protect ourselves and our people. We are a knee-jerk reaction government. We are not planning ahead. We think, as the government, that China and Russia and Iran and North Korea and all of our other enemies, that's internationally. We're not even talking about the domestic terrorists or the hacker groups that are affiliated with governments or not affiliated with governments. We don't seem to take the time out of the day to discuss how to protect our country and our way of life by hardening the grid, by resisting this sort of an attack, and just the EMP attack. I mean, we should be discussing, just in general, the grid down situation. That scenario terrifies me, because I know just how quickly this country will look like an apocalyptic wasteland. Give it a month. You won't recognize some of these cities. People will lose their mind and they will destroy everything in order to sustain themselves. When it comes down to survivability, people will do what they have to. And the whole notion of humanity and brotherly love, that's going to get thrown out the window very fast by a lot of people. You would hope not, but more than likely, it will. People will completely disregard other people's needs in order to just to sustain themselves. So the EMP Commission discussed complex interactions within our infrastructure and things that they considered were main talking points. The electric power, telecommunications, banking and finance, petroleum and natural gas, transportation, food, water, emergency services, space, and then the government. Now, I'm just going to read to you what they said because I don't really need to add to it. But just consider everything we just talked about. But all the complex intricacies within just the power system for the electric power of the country, and also the gas line, the pipelines, the SCADA system, catastrophic failures. How many people require electricity to survive that are within the hospitals and the nursing homes? Listen to this. The separation of these infrastructures into different domains tends to obscure the real interdependencies that sustain the effectiveness and daily operation of each one. As a simple example, the telecommunications infrastructure requires power that is delivered by the power infrastructure. If power delivery is disrupted by disturbances in the power grid, telecommunications substations will run for a while on reserve battery power, but would then need to switch to reserve backup generators if they have them. The generator's operation would rely on fuel, first from on-site storage and then conveyed to a central distribution point by the energy distribution infrastructure and delivered to the telecommunications substation by the transportation infrastructure and paid for by the components of the financial infrastructure. The technicians who show up to service this through the transportation infrastructure to make repairs would not do so unless they have been sustained by the food and water delivery infrastructures, and so forth. In turn, a functioning telecommunications system provides critical situational awareness and control to a power infrastructure that must keep its power generation in balance with its load in a dynamic control process over a very large geographical area. Telecommunications also plays a critical role in controlling the transportation system and is the basis of data exchange within the financial infrastructure. In the course of ordinary interruptions, many of these infrastructure interdependencies and interactions can be safely ignored. In an EMP attack scenario, the immediate insult is expected to affect the different infrastructures simultaneously through multiple electronic component disruptions and failures over a wide geographical area. Understanding these cross-cutting interdependencies and interactions is critical to assessing the capability of the full system of interdependent critical infrastructures to recover. In practice, understanding the interdependence may be a difficult task because subject area experts are not necessarily attuned to coupling mechanisms that span the boundary between their respective discipline and another, and because an accurate representation of the interdependence requires a familiarity with transdisciplinary phenomena. So, sounds like a bunch of humbo jumbo, right? Basically, what this is saying is that the hip bone is connected by the thigh bone. We are so connected that the moment an EMP hits, the moment another Carrington effect happens, or some sort of a grid down scenario happens via malicious attack from hackers, or a natural forming disruption from whatever storms or whatever natural forming disruption you want to think of, the moment we can't produce power, food stops. Producing gasoline and diesel stops. Natural gas pipelines may start to implode or explode depending on if the SCADA system is affected. According to this report, the SCADA systems throughout the United States would be severely affected to the point that we do not have enough technicians who can go to these places quickly enough to interact with release valves or open and close different valves or turn on or turn off different systems. And some of our technicians do not have the mechanical prowess to, I guess you could say, bypass SCADA and control all these systems themselves just to get the infrastructure back up and running if SCADA went down because of a power outage. I mean, if you think about 4.5 months, do this experiment this weekend. Go Saturday and Sunday without power. Don't use your phone. Don't turn the lights on. Turn your air conditioner off. See how it goes. See how many little inconveniences you have. Do you have the ability to even cook your food? Is everything ran off of electricity in your home? Do you have some sort of a natural gas oven or a barbecue pit outside? Do you have a wood-burning stove? Do you have some sort of a heating element that you can put in your home? Some sort of a cooking element that you can use outside safely? Something that you don't have to stand out, you know, in the sunshine or in the cold weather or rainy weather to prepare your food? Do you have the ability to sustain that? Some people use the small butane or propane cookers, right? Little green bottles, or you can buy the big 20-gallon bottles. Get those refilled pretty easily. How long will that last? Even the 5-gallon ones, you know, they last a little bit, and you can go bigger and bigger and bigger, but that starts to get really, really expensive. I have a 250-gallon propane tank outside, and just to get it halfway filled almost costs $300. What we're talking about right now is I feel to be one of the biggest threats to the way of life of the United States. If our power was so corrupted, so easily manipulated, so easily destroyed from one type of weapon, what happens to everything else? How quickly will it be before the refineries blow up? Or the natural gas pipelines or the petroleum pipelines start to explode when we can't properly release the pressure in them? How long is it until we can't properly relieve the pressure in the dams because everything is ran electronically? And then the dams explode and floods, you know, thousands of acres. What about bridges? Do you live in a city where you have a bridge that goes up and down in order to cross from one part of the city to the other? If that bridge is stuck in the up position when the power goes out, does it stay that way? Or do they have some sort of a mechanism for releasing that bridge to go back so that it meets the other part of the road? I don't know. Ask your city engineers. It's a question. You live there, you pay the taxes, I'd find out. We don't think about a lot of these things because we've never had to face it, unless it's that freak winter storm or hurricane or you know what I mean. And you only have to deal with it for a couple days, and then the good men and women who work in all the utility companies are out there slaving away to get the power back up and running, and we are the world's greatest at it. A lot of other nations don't have that. They don't even have these electricians. You know, we have to think of just about how many house fires would get started by people trying to cook in their homes when they've never had that experience before with an open flame. Not only that, but if we lose power in a portion of the United States, God forbid the entire portion of the United States, but it could happen. But if we lost the power, all the power in the United States, parts of northern Mexico and also parts of southern Canada will be affected by that too. How long would it be until we would be having our military drawn back in to help maintain security within some of these cities that are going to be completely and utter war zones? Just look at what happened in Portland. Just look what happened in the unconstitutional zone that was in Seattle. All you people who scream up and down about this dystopian utopia called liberalism that you want to live in, very quickly, a warlord was presented, and people started to be murdered. And then this same guy was passing out guns to kids. Oh, and also he wasn't just a quote-unquote warlord. He was a drug dealer. So he was also peddling drugs to people who already are interdependent on drugs. Very quickly, the experiment, which is called the United States, is going to implode on itself, and the cities are going to explode in violence, which will then go out to the suburbs, and then from the suburbs, you people will be coming out to the counties, and we'll have to deal with this slinky effect of violence until eventually somebody, some group of people, somewhere decides to all band together and to start recreating territories, start recreating cities, start recreating their own version of militias or military units, adding more manpower to the first responders from the fire department, the EMS, and also police and other security services. Everyone will be forced into a job because we have it right now where we have machines that take care of us. Our machinery, our electronics, they do everything. and we don't know what to do when they don't work anymore. I don't know. Just think about it. When people have to start using runners again with messages just to transport information from one side of the town to another. Hopefully we'll still have cars at work. A lot of us good old boys, you know, we'll have our horses and all, and four-wheelers and ATVs and side-by-sides, all that cool stuff. But for how long? How many of you really have that amount of fuel saved up? And how long will that fuel last? You can put stabilizers in your fuel, but it'll only last so many months, and it has to be used. And once it's used, it has to be replaced. So where do you get that from? Do you know how to get fuel out of the ground from a gas station? Are you going to have to siphon gas out of your vehicles? Can you make your own biodiesel? The answer for that is yes. There's actually quite a bit of research that's been done to that. And there are some redneck engineers out there, and I will probably very quickly become one of them, who are trying to figure out how to create their own biodiesel. But how many of your vehicles run off of diesel? There's a conversion kit that you'd have to use to be put into cars in order to run them off of diesel. My tractor will be able to be used, but God, I don't want to drive that everywhere. We don't think about these things. We have not given enough credit to the enemy either. Because the enemy has thought about this. The enemy has more than thought about what the cascading failures of America would look like if we just popped an EMP over their country 200 to 300 miles above the United States. That line of sight, if it hit directly within the United States, like directly over like Missouri or Kansas, it's going to go from the West Coast to the East Coast, North and South. We may literally all be affected by it. And if you already live in one of these very dangerous, crime-ridden, democratic strongholds, will you have the opportunity to get out? I'm telling you right now, as a former police officer, I would show up for work for a couple of days. And after a couple of days, I'm sure me and my buddies are going to be talking about how to get the supplies that we have back to our respective homes. And I would then probably hide that car or go burn it out in the middle of a field. Because the last thing I'd want any roving band of idiots to see is that there's a police vehicle sitting outside. I don't know. We don't think about this enough. We don't talk about this enough. Community preparedness is one of the real mechanisms of survival that we have in this country. That's how we started this country. Small communities. And we expanded because those communities created territories. And in between there, we commissioned trade lines and different routes to get from this city to that city. And then we started having different avenues of trade going back and forth. And then that grew up into different industries. You may live in a town that may start its own industry. Like, we are the bullet making town, and 10 miles down the road of what used to be this suburb is now the gardening town, because they just so happen to have the right pH level and the right type of dirt in order to grow the most beautiful and perfect greens. Further on down the road, you may have the chicken farm, and then the the cattle ranch. People will flock to these areas to defend it, and then they'll use all these things as their own form of currency. I would. I already plan on it. What have you planned for? Don't take anything I have said today for granted. Everything that I have given you so far, I've pulled off of a .gov website. Please visit the empcommission.org. You can also visit eai.gov to get a lot of these stats that I pulled off. We're going to continue to talk about this the rest of the week. I just wanted to give you as much examples of what the government is looking at, and especially Homeland Security is looking at as threats. And, you know, what is out there that is potentially a life-threatening crisis management style scenario that we will not have any control over. The pipelines, the refineries, the dams, the hospitals, the nursing homes. If you have someone in a nursing home and you need to go and get them and bring them back to your own home, do you have the medical equipment and the rationing of food ready for that patient coming to your home? Questions we need to ask, and we need to have answers for those questions. I'm Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. Out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.